Hello and welcome once again to The Way I See It, and my name is Vanessa Coleman. Today I'm going to read an extract from a speech by Leo McKinstry. He is a Northern Irish journalist and former Labour councillor, and this event was hosted by Voices for Britain on the 2nd of March 2016. The heading of this is, "The EU is one of history's most spectacular failures." The debate about the European Union is utterly surreal, a flight into absurd fantasy. To hear the Remain campaigners talk, you'd think that the EU is a vibrant, healthy, well-run institution which serves our national interests by promoting prosperity and peace. But that is a grotesque delusion bred of the most desperate wishful thinking. In reality, the EU is one of history's most spectacular failures. It is a wholly dysfunctional, utterly mismanaged organisation where ideology and bureaucracy have replaced efficiency and democracy. It is an ill-conceived experiment which has gone horribly wrong for decades. Yet its supporters continue to insist that we must continue to be part of this gigantic project, even as it threatens the very existence of European civilization. The dream of the federalist unity has turned into a nightmare for so many citizens of Europe. In a speech last year, the President of the European Parliament, Martin Schulz, proclaimed, "To my mind, hardly anything so perfectly embodies the achievements of European unification as open borders." Yet those same open borders have brought us the squalor of the jungle camp in Calais and the frontier rioting in Macedonia. Similarly, the Federalist zealots' obsessions with unrestricted free movement and cultural diversity brought the horrors of the mass sexual assaults in Cologne on New Year's Eve. It is the same story of catastrophe on every front where the EU operates. The European single currency, essentially a political initiative to drive further integration, has entrenched mass unemployment on an appalling scale. The livelihoods of millions, especially in Greece, Italy, Spain, and Portugal, have been sacrificed on the altar of the Federalist creed. The EU is a byword for institutionalised extravagance, waste and abuse of public money. This is an outfit that has not had its accounts properly cleared for 19 years, yet has 10,000 officials who enjoy a take-home pay higher than our own prime ministers. EU regulation on the marketing of hazelnuts contains 2,509 words, compared with just 70 in the Lord's Prayer. In 2012, a high-level meeting was held in Brussels, attended by 76 officials, as well as the President of the European Parliament, to agree the name for a corridor in one of its buildings. The meeting failed to reach a decision. Eager to create all its own trappings of statehood, the EU has its own self-serving, expensive diplomatic service with offices in Barbados and Papua New Guinea. This is the useless, destructive organisation to which the Remain camp insists that we must be shackled. But how seriously should we take their judgment? These are, after all, the people who predicted that Britain's refusal to join the single currency would be an economic disaster, whereas the real catastrophe has been the debt-laden, sclerotic euro. They wail about a leap into the unknown. Yet there is nothing remotely unknown about Britain's status outside the EU. We would just be returning to the position we held for centuries when we were a free, independent and highly successful nation. Indeed, there is nothing eccentric about non-EU membership. The world has 195 sovereign nations. 167 managed to exist without interference from Brussels, including the two most prosperous nations in Europe, Switzerland and Norway. Some of the Remain campaigners say that they accept that the EU is dysfunctional, but that we should stay to help the process of reform. But that is more nonsense. The charade of the Prime Minister's negotiations has shown that the EU is not remotely interested in reform, only in the fulfilment of its doctrine of federal integration. That is why the other EU members would not tolerate even minor changes to Britain's welfare benefits for migrants. The deceit is particularly telling when it comes to the politicians who still peddle the myth that membership of the EU involves no real loss of British sovereignty. But that is just another lie. The entire aim of the EU is to destroy the existence of the traditional national state and create a new federal entity. This is why the EU leaders are so fixated by the single currency, mass immigration, and free movement. They are vehicles for achieving those ends. At the Visitors Centre to the European Parliament is a plaque with these words: "National sovereignty is the root cause of most of the evils of our times. The only remedy to this evil is the Federal Union of the Peoples." They were written by Philip Kerr, later the Marquis of Lothian, who was a British diplomat and arch appeaser in the build-up to World War II. Like the modern zealots, he never dropped his doctrinaire outlook. Even on the eve of the Battle of Britain in 1940, he was urging Winston Churchill's government to reach a peace deal with Hitler's regime. But why should we pay any attention to the political leaders at the head of the Remain camp, given their appalling misjudgments in the recent past? David Cameron, now indulging in endless scare stories about Brexit, helped to deepen the misery of the Syrian civil war with his support for the anti-Assad rebels, whose force included a host of extremist elements. This is a Prime Minister who in 2013 actually wanted us to wage a military campaign on behalf of the insurgents. He showed the same terrifying impulse for international folly by aggressively supporting the anti-Gaddafi uprising in Libya, which has brought chaos to that country. It is hardly a record that inspires confidence. Cameron is also an enthusiast for the extension of EU membership to Turkey, a move that is bound to accelerate the migration crisis. And why should we listen to the thoughts of Tony Blair on the subject, the man who dragged us into the most misguided invasion of modern times on the basis of a false, probably illegal prospectus? Or heed the views of John Major, given that he clung so desperately to the exchange rate mechanism, even at the pit of recession, notoriously describing any moves to withdraw as fool's gold. None of these people have an ounce of credibility. But what I find extraordinary is the stance of the Labour Party. I used to be a Labour member until 1995 and served not only as a parliamentary aide to Harriet Harman, but also as an activist in Islington North, where, for a decade, I sat at the right-hand side of Jeremy Corbyn. Labour's deepening support for European integration was a major factor in my disillusionment. I could not understand why a party that was meant to support democracy, the interests of the working class, the resilience of British industry and social solidarity should support an organisation that is the very antithesis of all these vital interests. Labour did not used to be like this. Under Clement Attlee, the party was profoundly ambivalent about the Schuman Plan in 1950, which was the blueprint for the creation of the European Economic Community. Attlee's successor, Hugh Gaitskell, was openly hostile, famously declaring at one Labour conference that membership of the community would mark the end of 1,000 years of British history. Labour remained deeply divided in the 1970s, hence the initiative of Tony Benn in proposing a referendum on community membership in 1975. And in the In the early 1980s, the party even advocated withdrawal because it saw the common market as nothing more than a capitalist club. But all that changed towards the end of the decade, when French socialist Jacques Delors became president of the Commission. He pointed out that the European community did not have to be a banker's ramp. Instead, it could be a vehicle for the advancement of socialism, trade union rights, redistribution of wealth, and extension of welfare. All this could be achieved, he told the delighted comrades at the TUC conference in 1988, without having to win a British general election. The comrades were won over. Soon, Euro enthusiasm became the abiding feature of the modern Labour movement. The old suspicions vanished. European integration became the ultimate emblem of British progressive thought, associated with multicultural vibrancy and trendy globalisation. On the other hand, Euroscepticism grew to be seen as a reactionary force, xenophobic, outdated, nationalistic, the creed of bigots and the small-minded. Yet it never ceases to amaze me that acceptance of Brussels rule is seen as a progressive development. It is the very opposite. It is the denial of democracy. The EU represents a throwback to Europe's past, when the people were governed by unaccountable, unelected oligarchies acting entirely in their own interests. Who elected Jean-Claude Juncker as president of the EU? Did any British people vote for Martin Schulz or Donald Tusk? A free sovereign nation should have control over its own laws, taxes, welfare and borders. But that is precisely what the EU denies us. Here is what Tony Benn, the darling of the progressives, wrote in his diary after a visit to Brussels in 1974. The huge Commission building in Brussels is absolutely un-British. I felt as I were going as a slave to Rome. The whole relationship was wrong. Here was I, an elected man who could be removed. And here were these people with more power than I had and no accountability to anybody. My visit confirmed in a practical way all my suspicions that this would be the decapitation of British democracy without any countervailing advantage. That was written 42 years ago, when we were only in the common market. How much worse the erosion of democracy has become since we were sucked into the embrace of the European Union, the embryonic superstate. But it is not just its lack of democracy which shows how profoundly anti-progressive the EU really is. Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party, cheerleading for the In campaign, blather about protecting jobs and workers' rights. But that is exactly what the EU does not. Brussels represents a giant programme of jobs destruction, not only through the single currency, but also its addiction to anti-business regulation. That is why youth unemployment rates are approaching an incredible 50% in some parts of the EU. Through its addiction to free movement, the EU undermines the social solidarity on which welfare policies depend. Quite rightly, British people, often in badly paid work, resent having to pay for the benefits of new migrants who, by definition, have never contributed a penny to the British territory. And this is one of the classic myths of the pro-European case, that all migrants come here to fill jobs. In fact, according to the latest immigration figures released last week, only 47% of migrants came here to work, while British taxpayers are currently paying around £1 billion a year in employment benefits for EU arrivals. In addition, against all progressive values, the tax credit system, combined with open borders, acts as a huge incentive towards the import of cheap labour and the undercutting of domestic wages. Effectively, British taxpayers are subsidising exploitation and poverty pay. It is no wonder that big business is so in favour of the EU. But the people who lose out are those at the bottom of the pay scale. Frankly, it is bizarre that left-wing politicians should be supporting this kind of inequality. Finally, mass immigration, fueled by the EU, is stretching British public services to breaking point, particularly the NHS and state schools. Labour continually moans about the strain on resources, but their beloved EU is a central part of the problem. Our membership of the EU means that 500 million people have the right to healthcare here, just as they have the right to claim welfare. Think of what will happen when the EU gets its way over enlargement and 80 million Turks and Bosnians have full access to our civil services. Well, I think you'll agree that that was a fantastic speech, and I hope that I've done justice to it. So in the meantime, I hope that you're getting out there and talking to everybody and lending them some of the facts and, of course, promoting our Radio Free with all their contributors. So in the meantime, have a great day. Until we meet again, it's bye for now, and thank you.